Hello, very good morning, and thank you for joining us here on The Very Last Word.
This is The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
On this morning's programme, Jo Wood, ex-wife of Ronnie Wood, talks about the years she spent with the Rolling Stones. We discuss the issue of Dublin's urban sprawl as more and more house buyers have been pushed further out of Dublin and face ever-lengthening commutes. And in our weekly music spot, John Cadell and Dee Reddy discuss the music stories of the week, including the Christmas song that was voted the most annoying of all time.
The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
And Opel. A new Corsa, a new decade. The all-new Opel Corsa.
I'm delighted to be joined by Jo Wood, who has produced the book Stoned, Photographs and Treasures from Life with the Rolling Stones. After, 24 years married to Ron Wood. Yeah. And travelling the world with him and getting the opportunity to photograph some of the most intimate moments unposed.
Yeah, yes. It's a like a scrapbook photo album, really. It's like, you know, my family.
What gave you the idea?
Well, my friend John, who is an ex-rock journalist, I came over to the house and I was sorting through a small box of pictures, because I've got thousands, to put on Instagram. And he said, what are you doing, Jo? I said, oh, I'm just going to put some pictures on Instagram. And I said, just some of my old pictures. And he looked at them and he went, what on earth is this? And I said, these are just old pictures, John. He said, oh, my God, Jo, can I look at them? So I brought down another box and he started going through them and he said, you've got to do something with them. And I said, well, what am I going to do with them? I think I'm going to leave them to my kids. And he said, no, let's put them in a book.
How come you had so many printed photographs? And I asked that specifically because the modern generation has so many photographs digitally kept, but they don't actually print them off and put them in boxes or put them on their walls.
I've got about 150 photo albums and I've got boxes of loose pictures. And then smaller boxes with more favourite ones in. And that's how I'd kept them for years. And tickets and passes. And I just kept it all.
You're a hoarder, so
I'm
are you?
A hoarder.
Aren't you lucky that you are as well? And there's some fantastic photographs. How did you persuade everybody, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, everybody, Charlie Watts involved in the band, to allow themselves to be photographed? And what are many private moments?
I just took pictures. I didn't even ask them.
They just got used to you doing it.
Yeah. I started off with Polaroids. I had a Polaroid when I first met Ronnie in 1977, I had my Polaroid camera. So I started doing pictures with my Polaroid. And then he bought me a proper camera. In fact, the picture on the front of the book is my brand new camera. Well, obviously not now. So then I started taking photographs. And I just love that whole thing of putting a roll of film in a camera. And I'd keep all, on tour especially, I'd keep all the film until I got back home and have it all developed all at once. So I'd go in with like 150 rolls of film to be developed.
How did you trust the people who were actually developing the photographs not to take some of them and start selling them to tabloid newspapers?
But they didn't then. They just didn't then.
You must have had a good relationship with them.
Yeah, well, I'd just go in and say, will you develop these? Thank you very much. And I don't know why they didn't, but it's not like it is now. You could never do that now.
No, there's not a chance you could do it.
You could never do that now. It's changed. Then we were freer. You could fall out of restaurants and nobody took a picture of you unless I had my camera. But now you can't do that now. Times have changed.
See, I remember you, Jo, from many years in Lily's Bordello in the library. You would never have known who I was. You were there with Ron and various entourages of famous people and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
You met many years enjoying yourself here in Ireland, didn't you?
I loved it here in Ireland. I still love Ireland. We lived in County Kildare and it was always, let's go to Lily's. And off we'd go. Do you know, we'd drive home after a night at Lily's. Isn't that insane?
It is insane. Highly dangerous. Did you not have anyone to drive you in those days?
Yeah, we did have drivers. We had dedicated drivers as well.
And what sort of reaction did you get then, being a sort of a celebrity and a star in Dublin? It was mainly the 1990s,
well,
wasn't it?
It was Ronnie that's a celebrity and a star. I was just, the wife. Yeah. But they Ireland loves Ronnie. They absolutely love Ronnie. Because we bought that house so we could do a year out of England, because he was touring so much. And we just fell in love with it. He still has it, actually.
Of course, you partied hard as well, didn't you? I mean, and that's in the book. There's plenty of photographs with pints in hand and all the rest of it. And there was lots more done as well. Yeah. There's no escaping that, is there? No. That was your life.
I think if you're going to be in that rock and roll life then, you know, it was who was the strongest to survive. You had to survive. And you had fun. We had fun.
The survival of the guys in the Rolling Stones is quite extraordinary. Keith Richards, to think that, I mean, when you have all the stories, legendary of the drug use and all the rest of it, that he's still going so strong in his 70s. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
I know. It's amazing, isn't it? I'm so happy he's still here. He's a great guy. But he's the one that everybody thought was going to go years ago. And he's still good.
From what you've said, he seems to be the one that you're fondest of in many respects, was he?
He's like a big brother to me. And he always treated me like he was my big brother, like he treats Ronnie like his big brother. The two of them are like brothers.
Do you miss this lifestyle at all since you separated, went your different ways?
No.
You know, do you miss the touring and being able to take all the photographs?
I love touring. I missed it at first. And, you know, when they first went back on the road in 2012, something like that, I was kind of jealous that I wasn't there. Because I've got so many good friends that are makeup artists and wardrobe, Isabel, Caroline, Alan, all sorts of people that worked on tour. So I missed it at first, but now I don't miss it now.
Of course, it's interesting the way that you even have described the way the tour has changed, that it was very sort of loose and freewheeling in the early years.
Yeah.
And then it almost became corporate.
Yeah, well, in the early years, it was like we'd be 2 hours late. They would be 2 hours late to get on stage, you know, and there was, you know, you'd pull out something from the suitcase. I'd pull out, say, Ronnie, do you want to wear this jacket, or do you want to wear my pink jeans? You know, it would be like that. Then they had, Mick and Keith had that big argument, and they weren't talking to each other for 6 years. And they came back in 1989 with a new promoter, Michael Cole, and a rule book.
A rule book?
Yeah.
What was in the rule book? Oh, no drink, no drugs?
No, it was, you had to be ready on time. You had to, your bags had to be packed. You couldn't be late. You couldn't take illegal substances across any borders. You couldn't do this. You couldn't do that. It was just all that.
And did that take the fun out of it for you?
Well, it became a production rather than a concert.
And did it suffer, do you think, from that? What people got to watch? What was delivered in the performance by the Rolling Stones?
I don't think it suffered. You know, they're such great musicians. And Mick is such a brilliant frontman that he can hold an audience. Yeah.
So, Joe Wood, when did you last see the Rolling Stones play live?
Italy. Was it last year? I went to Rome and watched them play in Rome. I went to Sweden. That was a couple of years ago.
And do you still enjoy them every bit as much? Because this is something we've argued about on the programme recently. Is there a time when a rock and roll band should sort of retire the instruments and getting on stage, that it isn't what it used to be, that may not have the same magic? Or do you have a nostalgia for seeing them in more advanced years playing?
No, I preferred it in the early years. It was more exciting. It was fun. It was great. Now they are very... sort of, it is a production, even more so. It's not so spontaneous anymore. Yeah.
And I suppose, would it be fair to categorise you that you were sort of probably got a rock chick for many years? There's nothing derogatory in that. Some of my best friends were rock chicks. And once you're a rock chick, you're always one, really.
Oh, well,
aren't
that's
you?
All right. Once you're a rock chick, you're always a rock chick. Great. You can tell I was a rock chick in the book, though.
Well, from the photographs, definitely. Yeah. But you had a great time, great fun with this.
Yeah, it was great. I love doing that book. I love getting the pictures together and sorting through hundreds of them.
I know, and some gas ones. It was even when you have Ron Wood's mother with a Guinness in hand as well. Photographs like that are fantastic.
Yeah. It's good.
And don't they look so young in so many of the pictures?
I know,
when you look at the likes of Mick Jagger as well, You can see why he was...
It's funny because when I look at the pictures and see how young they were, I mean, it's incredible. Because when I look at them now, they seem the same age. But when I look back,
yeah,
I can see, gosh, I knew them when they looked like that. Yeah, it's funny.
Listen, you don't have to be a Rolling Stones fan to enjoy this book because the photographs are just so brilliant. They're so natural. And they just show decades after decades of the development of the band, but also what life was like in those times. So it's an absolutely tremendous production. You probably have enough photographs for another book, do you?
Easy. Easy.
It's called Stoned. Joe Wood, thank you very much for being with us here on The Last Word
of
Today FM.
Lovely to talk to you.
The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
And Opel. A new Corsa, a new decade. The all-new Opel Corsa.
When I started doing this programme back in 2003 full-time, remember one of the big stories in the early years that we used to cover was the amount of people who couldn't afford to find somewhere to buy to live in our major cities and who have been forced to buy accommodation further and further away from their job or where they had grown up. An urban sprawl, so that Dublin people were living as far away as Westmeath, obviously in Meath, up into Louth, down into Kildare, Wicklow, Wexford, and having lengthy commutes. And the same happening in Cork as well, people living perhaps an hour away from their place of work because that was all they could afford. Now, we thought that had stopped largely with the bursting of the Celtic Tiger bubble. But it seems that this problem is back. A major new report from the Banking and Payments Federation Ireland says that a large share of the new first-time mortgages for homes that they're seeing issued by the banks are now for the so-called commuter belt. Again, Louth, Meath, Kildare and Wicklow. About 41% of new loans. Let's start with Barry MacDonald from Real Estate Alliance. What do you make of that assessment?
Good evening, Matt. Our agents located certainly in Dublin and the surrounding counties are seeing this. And I mentioned the Dublin agents because they're seeing it with people coming back. And also we're seeing it with an awful lot of people looking to move out. And it's not a good situation, needless to say. It has its negativities for the individuals themselves because they're spending so long commuting, sitting in cars, which is no good for their well-being. It's no good for our road networks or for our environment or for the economy generally. And it's all down to really, you know, this scenario I'm sure is happening in many major European cities where as the economy progresses, values increase and people then from an affordability need to look out. But where it's most difficult in Dublin in particular is just because the infrastructure isn't in place in these commuter belt areas. You know, if you go on to any, you know, community Facebook page in these commuter towns, you won't be long finding negative comments about the poor school infrastructure, the poor transportation in these areas.
Stay with us, Barry. I want to play a little bit of something we recorded just before we came to air. One of our own staff members, Carrie O'Mahony, here in Today FM, who has this experience. I started by asking her where it is that she lives and commutes from.
So I come from Naas every day. Me and my husband travel in together every day.
At what time?
We usually try and leave the house before 7:30. After 7:30, then I just know my day is going to be very stressful.
Okay, if you leave before 7:30, what time do you get to Dublin by?
Hopefully by 9, but usually maybe 9:10.
That's from Naas. So you're talking about, okay, you can enjoy listening to Ian Dempsey on the way in. Yeah. And that's a great bargain if you are coming in. But when you moved to Naas, did you think that you would be spending an hour and a half in traffic every morning coming in?
I had a kind of an idea. Grew up in Kildare myself, so I'm kind of used to commuting. My husband is from Dublin. But we were coming from Wicklow beforehand, so our commute was quite long anyways. We were out as far as Ashford. So I thought my commute would be a little bit better when we moved to Naas, but it's not that much better.
Okay, and then what about going back? What time do you leave to get back to Naas?
I usually hang on for my husband, so we usually leave at about 6:30 to get home. I'm then usually, in the evenings if I leave at 6:30, I'm usually home by about 7:45.
The long day away from home. You're talking about over 13 hours away from your home.
Yeah, it's a long day. I'm always tired. Always complaining about how tired I am, but it's just part of life and get on with it.
Just get on with it. Now, is the decision to live outside Dublin one taken for financial reasons?
Absolutely. We definitely couldn't afford to buy a house in Dublin. We rented up here before up in Island Bridge a few years ago. And when we got married, we were very lucky in that Alan's grandmother let us live in her house in Wicklow while we saved for a mortgage. So we were so appreciative of that. We definitely wouldn't have been able to buy a house if it wasn't for her. But yeah, we wouldn't have been able to buy a house in Dublin, so our only option was Naas.
Okay, but what about the costs of the commute? Because do you have one or two cars?
One car, we travel together. I drive, he's learning, so hopefully he'll drive by the end of this year. But yeah, so we travel together every day, which is good because it's more cost effective to come and go together, and, you know, we split those costs between us, so it's great. But yeah, it's expensive enough to fuel a car and pay for parking. You know, I understand there is an option to take a bus as well, but the commute is just as long, really. It doesn't save any time. And at least if I'm driving, I have a little bit more peace, you know.
Have you tried the public transport option?
Yeah, we've done it. We've done the train, which just, it's too long of a day because we don't live near the train station, so we have to drive. We have to try and find parking then, which it's a small village in Salon, so there isn't much parking. And then we would travel in together, but then it just doesn't work for
Carrie,
us.
Carrie, that sounds like you're looking for the least worst option.
Yeah, that's what it is. It is. It's really just about what makes our lives a little bit easier.
Carrie O'Mahony, thank you for joining us. Okay, I recorded that a little bit earlier. Some messages coming in from listeners. A new house in Kilcool is 380,000 to 400,000 euro for a 3-bed, 2-bath. Same house in Dublin. Example, Rochestown Avenue, Dunleary, 660,000 euro. That's some difference. Another one says, my commute costs me 1,000 euro per month in diesel and car servicing. That's one hell of a commute. Where we're getting examples, I commute from Offaly to East Point in Dublin. I leave at 6 a.m. and I arrive at 9. 3-hour commute again on the way home. With the farmer's blockage recently, it added another hour. How can you spend that amount of time in your car every day going to and from work? Okay, we have a number of guests with us. We'll go to Edgar Morganroth in a second. But Barry MacDonald, if people decide to move out into the country and then can't hack it because of the length of their commute, how difficult are they finding it to move back to Dublin?
Very difficult. You know, the REA Group carry out a survey of house values every quarter. And our most recent survey has found that the average 3-bed semi-mat in Dublin City is coming in at 428,000 euros. And I'm not talking about a 5-bed detached overlooking the sea. I'm talking about an average 3-bed semi. And if you compare that to the commuter counties, the average out there is coming in at 246,000 according to our survey. So it's a massive differential. So, like, I practice myself as an estate agent, and I'm located in Lucan, which is, as many of your listeners will know, it's kind of a well-established suburban community. And every week, myself or some of my colleagues here in the office will meet somebody looking at a property with us that are aiming to come back. And, you know, regularly we chat to them about their reasons for it. And like that piece there and some of your listeners, it's increasing commuting costs. But also they're just fed up with the driving. And also a big one that we're hearing from people is they want to get closer back to their own community with regards to their extended family and the support that give, maybe with childcare and other issues like that.
Yeah, childcare is a major issue, because what if you have to get back to collect children from the creche or from school or whatever? Another listener says, I come from Mullingar to work in Dublin 1. I leave at 5:30 in the morning. I go back at 7:15 in the evening, Monday to Friday, all because a 2-bedroom apartment in Mullingar costs me 850 euro, but it would be 2,200 euro in Dublin. Edgar Morganroth is with us, Professor of Economics at DCU Business School, previously with the ESRI. And Edgar, I know you're not going to say I told you so, but you did predict that this problem was looming for Ireland, didn't you?
I'm afraid so. And of course, as you mentioned at the very start of the programme, it's not new. During the boom, we had exactly the same thing. People got priced out of the market. Now you've got the additional issue that you've got the prudential rules from the central bank that are binding constraints for people, and the very high prices. And there's a good reason for these rules, and I'm not against them at all, but they do pose a constraint, and the really high prices in Dublin mean that for a very large proportion of households, the Dublin market is actually not a possible market. You can't buy at all, and in fact they're even at this stage, there are some of the lower income groups, and no place in Ireland is actually a place where they could afford the average price.
And sorry, Edgar, it strikes me that it's even worse than that, because not only is it a question that people can't afford to buy in our cities,
they can't,
they can't afford to rent, because the rent can be more expensive.
Exactly. And this is really the housing crisis is creating and is also part of multiple issues that we are facing. If it's easier to build and cheaper to build houses out in the commuter belt so that people can afford to go out there, we're left with the unsustainable travel patterns. And of course, the time that people are also wasting in commuting has to be factored in as well. But we're not really tackling the housing crisis fast enough, and it is just as big a crisis as the climate crisis, and we need to build housing units.
Okay, Edgar, there's a very interesting text in from a listener from Anya, who says, "I feel for all those who are on the commuter belt. However, people don't want to live in high-rise accommodation. The only way you can live in the city now is high-rise accommodation. There should be no more houses built in Dublin, just mixed high-rise apartments, 1, 2, 3, and 4-bedroom apartments, but I can guarantee you nobody would buy them, that we're too fond of our houses." Well, I'd give another twist on that, Edgar. I'd say even if people did want to buy them, they'd find themselves beaten by the various investment funds, who then simply would rent out. So anything that is going to be built ends up in rented rather than actually been bought to live in.
That's not a problem, and we see that in other countries, but you need to have enough to go around in the first place, and that's the biggest problem we have. There simply isn't enough housing in the areas where there's demand for it. So as long as you have that situation, prices, whether it's rental or purchase, will be high. So if we want to address the high price, we need to increase the supply. And that also then means that we are actually housing people. And so this is really important. And I think it's quite right to say that people are not opting to go into city centre locations because they don't find them attractive. Well, if they're not attractive, we need to make them attractive. And so our land use planning and what we put into our cities is really, really important. What amenities are there? Is it an attractive place with kids, for example? And this is one of the big choices that people often make. When the children arrive, they want a garden because there aren't enough playgrounds, other facilities that they think they need. That is something we need to do. We need to get our urban spaces right if we want people to live there. And if we're not going to get them right, we're going to end up with this huge commute. And I did publish a report in 2018 where I'm actually projecting an extra 100,000 on top of what we already have commuting into Dublin from outside.
Do we have the public transport or the roads to allow for that?
We have neither. And what that implies is absolute gridlock. The M50 is already at capacity. A number of other roads are already at capacity. It is not sustainable. So we need to change what we're doing. And I'm afraid I'm not really seeing the change both at a local authority level and nationally.
Listener says, we're back to a situation where parents have to get their children up at 6 a.m. to wish them a happy birthday before both parents go to work. Every night when I put my 5-year-old to bed, she says, "Don't go to Dublin in the night." She says that because I'm never there in the morning when she gets up. And this is a major family issue as well. What are your solutions to this, Edgar?
We absolutely need to build houses in the places where there is demand, and that's in Dublin in particular, but also some of the other cities are seeing the same kind of problems and then long distance commuting in. And we need to invest in the urban realm, into public transport, and that's the only way we're going to solve
this. Okay, Edgar, there's a lot of listeners saying, one says, the biggest problem is there's not enough employment outside of Dublin. Others said, if you put the jobs in places where the houses are, so for example, if you have a major commute town, let's say Navan in County Meath, well, why not have a service state policy, build advanced factories or something, or tell the Googles or whoever are coming into Dublin, you can only have so much of your operations in Dublin, you must spread the rest of them around the country.
We've tried that, actually, that the advanced factories, that was something we did in the 70s and into the 80s, didn't work. Ultimately, businesses are trying to make a profit, and it seems, and there's overwhelming evidence from around the world that profits in cities are higher. And so they choose cities, and particularly cities of a particular scale, the larger the better, really, to locate in. And if they can't locate in Dublin, for example, or Cork, Limerick, Galway, I think that that's where we could also get more employment, they're simply going to go to another country. So it's not as simple as that. It is true that, that this mismatch between where we live or want to live and where the jobs are is causing this commuting issue. But you can't, you cannot dictate to firms where they're going to locate. They'll simply leave the country.
So that's not the solution. It's
that's not
saying
the solution.
You can't tell them to go to Navan or to Tullamore or places like that to make it easier for the people who are living in those areas.
And furthermore, actually, it's quite interesting. If you look at people who are working from home, and this is sometimes proposed as a solution to this, if you look at the increase in people working from home, which you can do using census data, you find that the vast majority actually live in city locations. So even the sort of gig economy, that actually takes place in cities, not in rural areas by and large.
Okay, Edgar Morgan Ross from DCU Business School, Professor of Economics, thank you for joining us. We also had Barry MacDonald from Real Estate Alliance, and earlier we heard from our own staff member, CFM, Carrie O'Mahony, talking about her own experience and her own 1.5 hour plus commute into work every morning.
The last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
And Opel. A new Corsa, a new decade. The all-new Opel Corsa.
It's music time and we're joined by Dee Reddy and John Cadell to talk through all of the week's news. And let's start. Okay, I'm going to indulge myself a little bit. Radiohead's Ed O'Brien has a new album coming out. Who's involved with him, John, in this venture?
Well, he has a fair few people now. The good news is that, yeah, there's an album coming, but the bad news is that it means there won't be a new Radiohead album until at least 2021, I'd imagine. But anyway, he's a few people on it. Flood is producing it. He's got a great,
repertoire?
He's got a great CV, having worked with U2, Depeche Mode. But he's also got Alan Moulder producing. And Alan Moulder famously, I think, worked with Smashing Pumpkins, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
But he has a few guests as well in the studio. Colin Greenwood, his Radiohead bandmate. Laura Marling, Glenn from Wilco, Adrian from Portishead are just some of the guests who will be appearing on the album that will be with us next year.
And okay, let's hear one track that we know of, Santa Teresa. Coming back early because of the look, the faces of the two of you in here.
It's just waiting for it to kick in.
Wow, a soundscape. Brilliant.
Elevator music?
Something like that.
I wouldn't go quite that far, but I mean, you've got on your computer screen there a kind of space sort of odyssey happening in the background. So I'd imagine if you were staring at something like that, it might be something you would enjoy.
Yeah, maybe.
Or literally put it in your headphones as you're walking out an art gallery or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't be for me now.
Yeah, but so no new Radiohead.
That was a disappointment. There's a new track, Brazil, coming out tomorrow. I wonder if would it be.
Well, let's hope it's not as bad as that.
Gosh, that wasn't a great place.
Wow,
was it?
Whew.
Where do we need to go? Maybe where we need to go to is a little bit of the controversy caused by the Pussycat Dolls by their performance on X Factor, the celebrity series. Is anyone watching that?
No.
Nobody that I know, anyway.
No, everybody's watching I Am Celebrity, aren't they? Nobody's watching the X Factor. They're the X Factor Celebrity, and now coming next week, it's X Factor The Band.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Like, Simon, it's dead. It's dead as a doornail.
Well, this is reinvigorated on Twitter for about 24 hours anyway, so that's something for them.
Can you describe the attire of the Pussycat Dolls?
I mean, honestly, Matt, I think it's a bit of a storm in a teacup, to be perfectly honest with you, that what they were wearing was, you know, the usual getup you see people when they're performing pop shows doing, it was kind of like a bralette with some form of bottoms, and then there was kind of sheer netting in between. I think the only real difference between the getup that these guys had and what you might have seen Britney Spears or Christina Aguilera wearing about 10 years ago or more was that the colour was black, so it looked slightly a bit edgier than if it had been pink and glittery. That was my take on it.
Okay, here's the type of thing that was on Twitter: disgusting, disrespectful and shameful, and all before the watershed. And another one: X Factor is a family show and I enjoy it with my 7-year-old daughter, who was shocked and disgusted as I was. Call yourself a role model, put some clothes on and grow up.
But Nicole Scherzinger has never called herself a role model, for one. And secondly, if your family show that you're watching with your 7-year-old is one where people are basically
gyrating, Deirdre.
Not gyrating, but they're actually kind of taking advantage of people for ratings and having sob stories and that, well, maybe you need to question what you're watching with your 7-year-old, to be honest, mate.
It just stinks a bit of outrage from Cambridge Wells, doesn't it? It's like, I cannot believe, like, points of view years ago.
It's real Karen wants to speak to the manager. Manager,
Twitter,
and I apologise to any.
To work on it as
of course.
Well, it was 400 people that complained, over 400.
And that's only like 20% of the X Factor audience these days. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear, though, a little bit of the Pussycat Dolls.
No, let's
don't
not.
Ya?
No.
I know you want it. I know you want it. It's easy to see. It's easy to see. And in the back of your mind, I know you should be home with me. Don't you wish your girlfriend was hot like me? Don't you wish your girlfriend was a freak like me? Don't you? Don't you? Don't you wish your girlfriend was raw like me? Don't you wish your girlfriend was fun like me? Don't you?
Isn't that one of the great 21st century pop songs, John?
We've discussed this before. Might have been before your time. Just vile.
I watched the whole performance and it was a medley of some of their biggest tracks. That one, When I Grow Up, which I thought was an interesting one to put into X Factor, actually, because it's all about somebody wanting to be famous and then be careful what you wish for. Yeah. So maybe that 7-year-old who was watching could have taken more from that. But the dance moves that they did were absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I just have an issue with that song. I just think it's...
it was a medley, though, of about 5 songs. Okay. So, and the whole thing put together actually...
What's your issue with that song?
I just think it's a bit... Now, I wouldn't be like, you know, I'm not one of these faux feminists, but I think in this...
No, because you're a real feminist.
Well, just I think it's a bit... It's not very women empowering, is it? You know, I bet you wish your girlfriend was as good as me. It's just a bit... It just doesn't sit well with me. I'm not one of these, you know, virtue signalers by any stretch, but I've always had an issue with that song.
It's fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway.
Is there anything we could cheer you up with? Because Beatles. We know it's your birthday today. And I expected you, because it's your birthday, to be in, and happy birthday, John, to be in good form, to actually come in here with a smile on your face, to be embracing.
I don't know how many
choices.
Times I've asked you for a free signed copy of your new book, only to be met with, like, disdainful remarks and swattings away, Matt. So, like, don't dare wish me a happy birthday when you've nothing in your other hand. Anyway, Beatles. Can we talk about the Beatles? That'll cheer me up.
Why do you want to talk about the Beatles? You're always talking about the Beatles.
I know,
why do you want to talk about them again?
Well, because there's a new and immersive Sgt. Pepper event happening in London over the next few weeks, whereby Giles Martin, who remixed it in 2017, has sort of been over putting a bunch of speakers around a room and listening to Sgt. Pepper as you would have heard it if the Beatles were playing it in the studio. So the whole thing is that you will imagine the Beatles are in the room with you when you're hearing it now.
I'm pretty sure some dude I was in college with tried to do this as well.
Everybody worth their salt has tried to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit much. Come on.
Yeah,
now.
But the thing is, it's free. So that's good. And, you know, there will be enough people who will be curious enough to go, you know, okay, well, I'd be interested in hearing this. It's literally surround sound Beatles. So I'm all for that. Now, it is a bit of a stretch, but like, they're not charging any money for it. So go along and listen to Sergeant Pepper's...
And things like A Day in the Life.
Yeah. It's Liverpool. I said London. It's
classic,
Liverpool.
Classic. Every and it time is I hear free, it now, so. Though, I also think of Paul Howard's book about the life of Tara Brown, which is, of course, that story is what John Lennon is singing about, and that's what
he's the
Paul
lad
Howard.
Who blew his mind out in the car, according to the song.
He was a Guinness heir, was he?
He was, and he was Irish.
Yeah, the book was called I Read the News Today, Oh Boy, wasn't it?
I think that was the name of it, and it's terrific, yes. Mm. Okay, well, that's something to put a smile back in your face.
Thanks, Matt.
Phew, thank God for that. Anyway, okay. Okay, Billie Eilish, in fairness, should she have known who Van Halen was when she was doing this Jimmy Kimmel quiz?
No, it's, again, it's another story.
About a ridiculous
it's deeply
argument.
Deeply unfair. But basically what happened, right, she was on Jimmy Kimmel. If you watch the full clip, it's actually a bit of fun. So Jimmy Kimmel is basically, Jan's wearing a Van Halen t-shirt here beside me, so I better be careful.
I hate to tell you on radio, but he's just unveiled, opened his shirt to reveal a Van Halen t-shirt. Enough, John, enough. Sorry,
Dee. No problem. So it was actually a nice little kind of piece in the interview between Jimmy and Billy, where basically he is talking about how incredibly young she is and what incredible success she's had at that age. So he decides to quiz her about things that were famous in 1984 when he was 17. Mm. And he lists off a load of things. So she gets Madonna, she doesn't have a clue about the Gremlins or the original Ghostbusters and a heap of other things. Cabbage Patch Dolls really confused her. It was all very funny, very, very light-hearted. He said, can you name someone from Van Halen? She went, Van who? Everybody laughed. It was funny. At one point she says, I feel like you're trying to make me look stupid. And he goes, absolutely, I'm not. You don't come across stupid at all. I wouldn't have a clue what happened in 1943. Mm. End scene. And it was a nice little thing. Everyone had a bit of fun. For some reason, possibly because the news was a bit quiet in the US over the Thanksgiving period, a group of absolute grumps got online and started giving out yards about her and saying that as a musician, she should know more about Van Halen and that they knew the artists from when they the year they were born, like Elvis and Frank Sinatra and yada, 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 yada.
But she wasn't born until, what, 2002? So, like, Van Halen, Van Halen haven't been in the public consciousness really since about 1988.
No, but there's one
relevant.
One particularly sad thread that goes on for an absolute age, and it's a group of, and I do apologise for this, but predominantly middle-aged men by the looks of it, who, given by the people that they're listing, but they're saying, oh, well, I know who was famous 17 years before I were born. But they're naming people like the Beatles and Elvis and Sinatra, who, and no offence to you and your T-shirt, John, I would argue,
are
more enduring.
When I saw them trending, I thought Van Halen had died.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry for your loss. That hasn't happened.
But you're right. It's like, they were trending and I'm like, why? But then Wolfgang Van Halen, who was the last bass player in Van Halen, said...
Son of Eddie.
Yes, son of Eddie, said, leave her alone. Why should she know? And well, why should she know who Van Halen are?
And he said music should unite people, not break them apart. And also he joined Van Halen when he was like 15 and people were giving out about him then.
Yeah.
So
You don't actually have any Van Halen music to hand. Is that because all they have is Jump?
No, Matt, they don't. Now, okay, it was probably the commercial high watermark of the David Lee Roth years, but then they had How Do I Know When It's Love, and also Why Can't This Be Love, and other singles that didn't mention love, with Sammy Hagar as well in the late 80s. But he never really reached the heights and the...
It was his best, I think, actually playing the guitar on was Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Oh, God, no.
Oh. It's great to bring John back down from that temporary
man,
high.
Matt, sometimes you're so basic. It's funny. He's intelligent. Like, how many books has he written? He hasn't given me. But like he says the best thing he ever did was the solo on. No, I mean, great solo, but no, Matt. Like, go and listen to Eruption or something. It's only a minute and a half long, and then come back and then try and talk about Van Halen next.
To make sure we get them in, let's get to picks of the week. And John, this is bound to cheer you up for the last 10 minutes or so of the programme. What's your pick of the week?
This is the first album in 13 years, and I know you're going to have fun with this, from The Who. Now, The Who these days...
But at least it's new album and not one of your reissues you're giving us.
Well, I thought that you might give out because it's a new album by a heritage band. Now, granted, half of them are dead, but the two who are alive have released a new album together. It's just called Who. And it's coming out on Friday. It, obviously, Townsend and Daughtry. And I'm
that
always,
would really confuse Billie Eilish.
It would, yeah. But I'm interested to hear what it sounds like. There's been a couple of singles released through Spotify and streaming services and that. So this is something like what this is going to sound like.
Okay, this is All This Music Must Fade. I don't care. I know you're gonna hate this song.
Now, classic Who. Sounds all the hallmarks of a classic Who track, that.
It does sound great.
Yeah. So that's
I don't dislike it.
Yeah, good. I'm glad to hear it. Would you be interested in checking out the album?
Possibly.
Yeah, okay. It's out on Friday. Just called Who.
What's it called again?
Who.
What? Okay. What's your pick of the week, too?
My pick of the week this week is a song. So Bombay Bicycle Club have released the title track of their first album in 5 years. The album itself is not out until January, but this is a sign of great things to come. It's called Eat, Sleep, Wake, Nothing But You, and it's a little bit darker than the sound that we would usually associate them with.
Like that, James.
It's nice, but I did get the name wrong. It's actually called Everything Else Has Gone Wrong, which is the name of the album. Eat, Sleep, Wake, Nothing But You was released about a month ago. Okay. So I do apologise
for that. Do you like that, John?
Well, Bombay Bicycle Club always struck me as a bit pleased with themselves. They were like science students who fell on instruments, but I do like that.
It is. Really like that.
Thankfully. What? Wow. You built that one up nicely. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Right. Now, this is the time of year when, of course, lots of gigs for 2020 get announced. Probably on the basis that people buy tickets as presents for other people. Pussycat Dolls, we mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. are coming to Dublin next mm-hmm. year. Dua Lipa.
Yes.
Oh, one of you, please, go on.
It's your birthday, you go ahead.
Yeah, two nights in the Three Arena in June, the 18th and the 19th. Tickets on sale this Friday. So yeah, she'll be here and a lot of people are looking forward to that. New album is called Future Nostalgia. I think it's not out yet, but it's obviously she's touring on the back of the album. She's finishing the European leg of her tour in Dublin, so I'm sure it'll be a couple of good party nights. And of course, she's good value, like Dua Lipa. Great singles.
Oh, good, because you didn't sound that enthusiastic.
Yeah, no, I like her. Yeah.
You built up. Let's hear a little bit of her in action.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Okay.
That'll be great.
Crowded House are coming.
That's right. Yeah. So fresh off from touring with Fleetwood Mac, Neil Finn is back with Crowded House.
Where he belongs. Where he belongs.
I just said that especially for you. But yes, they've announced a date at Cork's Live at the Marquee on June 29th. And they've also added a Dublin date to the tour. So they're going to play part of the Trinity Summer Series at Trinity College on July 1st, which will be a lovely venue for them, I think.
Let's hear a bit of Crowded House, Fall at Your Feet.
Yeah.
Your feet. You had a brilliant description of Crowded House there just off mic.
They are the Australian squeeze, as far as I'm. And I know, before the pedants start, I know Neil Finn is from New Zealand, but the band identify as Australian.
They do.
Okay. Yeah. Well, just to finish out, the worst Christmas song ever. There's a new list has been done, the most annoying Christmas song. I wonder if people can guess what it actually is. This is a British survey.
Yeah, see,
I'm a bit surprised by this.
No, you'd want to take this with a pinch of salt. Mm. It was a poll conducted by a mobile phone company.
Okay.
Saying that these are the songs that British people ranked as the most annoying Christmas song ever. But to me, it's just...
Right, let's do a quick countdown. We finish out the programme on it.
Okay. Okay, go
give it to us. Go on.
Oh, number 10, Jingle Bells, Andrew's Sister. Number 9, oh, sorry.
Number 9, Santa Baby, Eartha Kitt, Muck.
8, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, Jackson 5.
Number 7, Baby is Caught Outside, Tom Jones, Clarice Matthews, controversial.
Very. Number 6, Fairy Tale of New York, The Pogues and Kristen McCall.
Yes.
Matt loves that. Number 5, The Best Christmas Song Ever, Last Christmas by Wham.
Number 4, Merry Christmas Everybody, Slade, should be higher up.
Number 3, I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day, Wizard.
Should also be higher up. Number 2, Do They Know It's Christmas? Band-Aid.
Yeah, and I can understand that. And to finish, we will leave tonight, Dee Reddy and John Cadell, The Birthday Boy, by going out with the nominated song as the most annoying Christmas song ever.
Rubbish.
Can you believe this? Because the choice is to finish up the last word this evening. Good night to you on Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas. That's all we have time for on this morning's show. You can catch up on all of the show's podcasts on the Today FM app powered by Go Loud or wherever you get your podcasts. and with some great ones there from during the week. That's all we have time for on this morning's programme. We'll be back every day next week, Monday to Friday, 4:30 until 7:00. We'll see you then. In the meantime, have a great weekend.